Hello, welcome back to Making It Real, a podcast by TKS that follows our alumni all around the world. I'm your host, Isabella, from the 2018 Toronto cohort, and I am so excited to share these conversations, the insights, the texts, the problems that we talk about. So without further ado, let's go make it real. Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I'm so excited to be here with one of my favorite people, closest friends. We are going to be chatting about lots of things. Ula is currently at Yale studying computer science and economics, and we kind of met through the college application process. Naveed connected us over email or something like that. And then I was in New York, oh gosh, what was it, like 2021, the summer of 2021, or 2022. Then we went out, we got some Italian food, and it was just, the vibes were immaculate. And then most recently, we were in Lisbon together, which was super, super fun. So excited to have you here. I'm so excited to chat. How are you doing? Do you want to introduce yourself differently? Just tell us about you, why you're amazing.
Absolutely. Well, it's so good to be talking to you again. I know that we send each other both casual low text and deep text very routinely. So it's good to have a conversation on the books to dive deeper into stuff that's on our mind. Mm-hmm. I love the question, introduce yourself, because I was just talking to a stranger at a picnic about the importance of doing this authentically. And I typically used to say, like, hey, I'm Ula. I am a junior at Yale doing XYZ major. These are my extracurriculars. This is what I'm building, right? But I think that people build up a very specific reaction to, oh, I'm majoring in computer science, for instance. And talking to the stranger at this picnic, he said you should start introducing yourself as a writer, because that's so much more interesting than, oh, I'm a CS major, because then that leads to more, I think, excitement in the conversation rather than like the typical questions. And he said that he immediately preferred talking about my thoughtfulness and the difficult questions I'm asking rather than the classes I'm taking. So yeah, love the introductions question. And I'm going to stick with the fact that I'm a writer, because it is. You know, even though I'm majoring in a STEM field, I like reflection, and I think that's a core tenet of my identity. So I'm Ula, I'm a writer, I like asking difficult questions about things to get people excited, about meeting each other.
That's amazing. And also, did you publish the blog that I read yet?
I have, like, 5 posts that are in draft mode right now, because I'm waiting for it to be the right time to publish them. But I've written way more since we last talked. There's so much in draft mode right now.
Okay. So you wrote an article about a really pivotal experience you had in Poland, and I won't spoil it for anyone, but it was an exceptional read, like just fantastic storytelling. And I think in many ways, like, yeah, you're smart woman in STEM, blah, blah, blah. But like what makes you is that you ask really great questions, and you're able to connect with the stranger at the picnic, but you're also able to connect with a random person on the train. You're able to like talk to a nun for 6 hours and like gain something really profound. And I would say that that's more of a cornerstone of your identity than the fact that you're also able to take like a crazy computer science class, right? And I think that's so valuable to think about. Do you find that sometimes you have to prove yourself when you introduce, like, are there instances where you maybe would rather say like, I'm the computer science Yale student?
100%. Yes. I think I'm also such a big, I don't know what the word is, wordaholic. Like, I really like words. And so I have actually a running list of words that I'm interested in and ones I want incorporated into my vocabulary. So one that I'm trying to actually remove from my vocabulary, not because it's a feature of my identity, but one that I think is on a lot of people's subconscious, is the word transactional. Because I think in college, I mean, we're young, we go into conversations wanting very specific things out of them. And because of that, we want to exemplify a very specific part of ourselves. So I remember a big part of my freshman year experience was saying, oh yes, I'm a CS major. So that people immediately associated me with entrepreneurship, innovation. And it turns out that they just associated like CS majors like, oh, you're one of those people. And eventually I realized that one of the best ways to make friends outside of the CS major is not by saying, oh yeah, I'm into entrepreneurship, but really like going back to the core features of my identity. So yeah, transactionality and going in with wanting to get something out of a conversation, big no-no. Being yourself will get you so many more interesting and genuine friendships.
Yeah. And so with that in mind, what is a mindset that you've been relying a lot recently?
As I was moving into my college dorm, I actually wrote down a series of post-its of things that I wanted to build upon during my junior year. So these are a few more words, and then I can bring up mindsets in a second. I think the first one was thoughtful, because I think college is about like boldness and not a lot of people and excitement. And I think not a lot of people take the time to be on the quieter side. I think people are like, oh no, being quiet is a bad thing. So I'm trying to be more of a thoughtful listener than just like be like me, this is who I am, like really intense. And so one of the posts on my wall is like, oh, no longer being like a curious, bumbly student, because I mean I'm always going to be that. That's so me. But I think now we're going more towards a thoughtful and reserved young woman. So that's a key word, thoughtful. And then perhaps going to a mindset is gratitude. I'm big on like walking down the street and observing the little things. So I remember in Portugal, the way that you phrased it really well, it's figuring out who, oh my gosh, how did you say this? Who holds, I think, the power in various industries. You said it really well for what it's worth. So I like knowing how things come together to work in the city. And I think that when you match it with gratitude, it's you're figuring out how something works, how networks of people come together, and you also appreciate the little things. So ultimately, the understanding how things work is not so that later on you can be like, for a trend in a transactional relationship, you're like, okay, I can tell you about XYZ. It's no, it's I appreciate the fact that I know how like someone designed this network of, I don't know, train systems to get people to where they're going. And it's not just to get them to their jobs. It's like it's more deep. So yes, big fan of gratitude and understanding a world through that lens.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. And I'm sorry, I'm just eating my chia pudding, but
I love chia pudding.
what
I
you
discovered it this summer. Chia pudding is the best.
The best. I totally agree. It's like, and then I only have to I do limited dishes because I just eat this, and then I go into my kitchen, put some milk, put some chia, goes back in the fridge. It's the exact same thing. So I wash dishes every couple of days, and so it's the most. Anyway, totally different, but love chia pudding. You said something that like I really read. What was the first? You said thoughtfulness,
Being reserved,
gratitude. Oh yes, being reserved. So recently, I've been thinking about impressing people, and often I've impressed people through my articulation or through what I have to say. But the thing that I would like to shift that towards is to impress people with my listening, to impress people with my silence, so that each word that I say carries more value. Because if you think about the value of a sentiment, let's say I like have a passage and I share something that has like a value because you perceive that value. Now, if I use fewer words and more pauses to deliver the same kind of value, right? You're getting more value per word. But also, the value is not just like if we had a paragraph, we can read it in two totally different ways and someone else can perceive it. That's why you have actors. If everyone could just like read lines in a script, then we wouldn't have like talented actors or the best actors, right? There's not just words, there's the tone, there's the way that you pause, there's the emphasis. So recently, and that's why I resonated, I really want to be in control of the things I say and the things I don't say, and to superimpose those things so that I can impress people with both silence and my articulation. The thing that I need, the like deficit, kind of like also what you were saying with the bubbly student. That's the thing that you'll always have. You don't need to practice being a bubbly student. But the thing that you and me, we have to practice is how can we just take a moment to pause? And how can that affect the end goal of our communication?
So taking a moment to pause on that before replying, I think something that also began to happen when I began trying to make things less about me and more about the other person is when I speak less, that gives them a chance to, I think that lets the conversation take a more natural direction, because I'm a very intuitive person, and I don't know if that comes with just having been in such a lot of in so many different environments that I kind of like I have so many scripts in my head where I'm like, okay, I know where this is going to go. Like, I'm not invested in this because yeah, it's going to turn out this way. But by speaking less and saying the typical things I say, the conversation goes places I wouldn't think it would. So perhaps I want something I'm working on is asking people less questions and letting them ask me more questions, because that reveals how they think a lot more, and it's so much more enjoyable than just having a person rant about, oh my God, this is the article I read. I think he would so love it. And then that's all about me again. But yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever struggle with silence?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So.
And actually, the way that I realized this recently was I was walking with a really good friend of mine. We had just caught up after not seeing each other for a few months over the summer. And after all the typical, like, oh my God, what did you do this summer questions, we walked in silence for like 5 minutes. And I turned, I was like, Teresa, we just walked in comfortable silence. I haven't done that with anyone in college yet. Thank you.
And I think, because I don't know where we learned this thing of needing to interject in conversation and how a little piece of silence, like 12 people, will fill it in. And actually, I think that I learned it, at least through my own insecurity, of not being validated within circles. And therefore, when there was an opportunity for me to speak, I knew that my words were good because I spend a lot of time thinking. And so it was my opportunity to prove my value. And I think the very need to like prove those things, like first of all, it's like you're not going to prove yourself in that way, but it's building off of a false narrative, perhaps an immigrant narrative of like my parents did a lot of shit to get here, and therefore I have to be as valuable and like optimized as possible. But what I've realized recently in the pursuit of saying less, but saying more meaningful things, is I've also had to become comfortable with my own value and to not get validation from interjecting in those brief moments of time where people start to add in. And that's
Right.
hard.
Yes.
But
Yeah.
it's self-discovery. Like you rock with Marie, so it sounds amazing. But what other kinds of self-discovery or maybe more like internal reflections on your own value so that you're less burdened by your insecurity? Does that resonate? What have you been doing with that?
Yes. And this goes back to the broader theme of me having to physically put post-its up in my dorm on the things that I'm actively trying to work on. I'll give you a more external, like people-focused answer, and then a more what's going inside Ula's head answer. So, because it's junior year in college, I mean everyone has a reputation. You kind of know what everyone's thing is. And for me, it's people know me as, and I actually deeply dislike this world. This world, this word. Oops. Everyone calls me a girl boss. And they say it positively, like, oh yes, you're always hustling. You're always up to things, you're a networking queen, you're a powerhouse. And
Yeah, same.
well, positive, but that kind of reflects how I behave in conversations, right? I'm like super energetic. I want to talk about a million things. I want to know what people are working on. I want to know how they are. But I'm trying to change that reputation to be like, oh no, please don't associate me with someone who's going to be professionally successful or professionally famous for being good at something. Like, I don't want people to be like, oh yeah, I'll be friends with Ula because she is going to go on to know everyone at XYZ startup. And I think I want people to, one, recognize me more as a writer, and then rather than someone who's too curious about everything, this is going to sound so cheesy, but to think of me as a Renaissance woman instead, because that brings with it, I think, a more thoughtful, reserved manner, a more artistic sense than just, oh, doing everything at once for a career outcome. So that was the external answer, is trying to focus on changing my reputation. And then on a more internal self-discovery path, and I guess the external arises from the internal, working backwards. I recently became a lot more comfortable being by myself. So in between classes, I think this is actually a phrase you use. I walked myself. Like, I literally told myself, like, okay, well, we're going on a walk. And I went to the art gallery on campus. And we have a bunch of pieces that our history department collects from all over the world. And goodness, I'm forgetting the word. I think they investigate what is providence? I'm totally
I
blanking. It's a P word that basically says that the history of a piece and how it got to Yale's
don't
campus. And that's something I would never have done last year. Like, in between classes, oh, I have an hour, I'm gonna pop into the art gallery. And it was good because it was I didn't run to the engineering department to whiteboard out my schedule or what I wanted to do. I always carry whiteboard markers in my backpack. It's like, it's a standard. You always got to be ready. And instead, I went to this gallery. I took the time to be silent, to be thoughtful, appreciate, going back to the gratitude. So I changed my environment to help work on the mindsets I'm trying to instill in myself. But also, okay, contradiction. I was recently reading this quote that said, you shouldn't work on changing your, and this was in a more religious setting, but you shouldn't work on changing your environment when, like, something isn't going well. You should change on your mindset and how you approach it, because running away from your problems, and I typically used to, like, run away to nature, so when I needed time to get away from something that wasn't going well, I was like, okay, must go to, like, the most different place I can think of and just completely, like, delete Instagram, delete Twitter, just zone in on myself. And now I've realized I don't need to escape because I have a mindset of that gratitude and thoughtfulness that doesn't, like, lead me to run away from things anymore when they're not working out.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I think the part where my brain starts to kind of twirl is that sometimes your environment is the problem and sometimes you're the problem. And oftentimes it's a combination of both. So for example, last time I was on UNC, so a year ago, I found it really frustrating to go to school and between my classes, like, work productively because the library was always full and, you know, we had to, like, circumvent every, you know, the whole floor and then, oh, this floor. And then you're looking and then I always wanted a whiteboard and, like, getting those whiteboard rooms is impossible. And I just felt like I was, like, fighting to get all these things. And I realized that I probably wasted, like, at least 50 hours, like, just like circumventing, just trying to find a place where I felt comfortable and productive. And it still was always temporary because you can't study after 5 o'clock on Fridays or Saturdays. And, like, these times where you have, like, really so silly, like, when am I supposed to study? So then hence this whiteboard that I bought for my room, and I kind of have, like, a way too big room for one person. But it's interesting because, like, I'm still in the same place, like the same town, but I realized that there was a problem with the environment, which is, like, I felt frustrated, like, not feeling I have a place to do my work, and I get really happy when I get to study or, like, grow my brain or read, etc. And so I realized that, like, instead of carrying the whiteboard markers around, because also it's hard to get whiteboards on UNC, huge problem. Yeah. Just kidding. Well, it's a huge problem in my mind, but not for most people. And then I was like, what can I do? I can just get my own whiteboard, and then I can carve a space within my room, and that's, like, so much more efficient than walking to campus. That's kind of what I...
I was looking at buying a whiteboard, and I have this plan that in my house in the future, I'm just going to have a room, like, for whiteboarding. Whiteboard walls.
Like, half library, half whiteboard room?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I want, like, one of those ladders. So it's, like, a two-story room, but no ceiling. And, like, books. And then the other side, just whiteboards, and you can just tie it all together. I think that's going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
How have you set up your dorm room this year?
Oh, that's a good question. I am very intentional with how I use my space because, like, going actually back to that previous question, I used to find my room as kind of like a place to run away to from all the hustle and bustle of the university. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to feel equally like a part of home. So I didn't get, like, new dorm things. I didn't go out, like, on a whole dorm shopping spree or dorm bonanza. I really just used things I already owned. But at the same time, I wanted it to serve as inspiration so that it felt a little bit different from school and home. So a third place.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this arises out of my interest in interior designer. Just I love architecture. So I have themes for my room, and in line with my theme of thoughtfulness, writing, and gratitude, I went for a very old academia vibe. So I have, like, this old lamp I thrifted. I have this panoramic print of, like, old historic New England. I have some travel things that we collected even in Portugal. I have, like, this mosaic thing I got at the Tile Museum, which I'm obsessed with. So I built up my dorm to be a bit of who I was, who I am, and who I want to be.
Amazing.
I do that through themes, objects, so when I walk into this space, it just feels different. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. I'm also thinking about that. So like this whiteboard moves, so it's on wheels, so I can kind of like move around. If you see in the back there, that gray thing, it's actually a drawer set that I got for free, and I bought paint, and so I'm gonna sand it and paint it, which actually paint is so
Love that.
expensive.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
but I need a craft. Like I need something where over a couple of days I can, because I think something I've learned about myself is that I'm not a town person, especially when I don't have mobility. Like I don't have a car, right? And when everything is a car distance away, and like the main street is like my, I don't know, like I grew up in the suburbs of Toronto, and like my corner store was more interesting than the main street here, right? So I'm like, it's like a very, it's an increase of boredom, basically. And so I've realized it's like, it is what it is, right? Like I can't change that much. If I am getting value from the education, then I'm in this place. That's how it's gonna be. So I realized that I need to do more crafts. I need to do more things that make me feel excited. And one of the things that I've decided to do is like explore that interior design interest, because I have a really big space for a good amount of rent. Like I'm not paying too much in rent. I think I have the lowest rent of anyone I know. So, and it's a huge room. It's an old house. So anyway, I'm like, okay, well, this is my opportunity, right, to try these new things, and that's kind of how I thought about it. And I made this, I don't know if you can see this magazine wall.
Oh
It's
my gosh,
actually,
I love it.
yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, thank you. And then there's, so I'm actually getting new covers tomorrow because I don't want it to be so blue. And there's like a little wooden basket, so I'm gonna do like lots of woven baskets, just because it brings me a lot of joy. And like this, I'm like looking at the wall, and I'm like, oh, it's pretty. And it's actually, I was in the Zagreb airport in Croatia. And I was like, I have like these huge walls and I have nothing on them. And then I like was flipping through magazines and I was like, this is perfect. So I spent €5 on like a Croatian interior design magazine where I just thought it was really pretty. And I spent like last Sunday just like gluing it all together. So it was really fun.
Yes. And I think a lot of people, I don't want to say forget about arts and crafts, but they forget the bliss of retreating into making something with your
Yeah.
hands. One of
Yeah.
my favorite quotes, and this was from a chef that I was studying from when I decided to take culinary history classes this summer. He said, "We're becoming a two-finger generation, where all we care about is thumb, texting, texting, texting." And back in the day, we were full hand people, you know? We used every finger to survive, to create. And I get so much joy from making things for people that I love, that I appreciate. And sometimes people are like, okay, Ula, that was a little bit too much. Like, I don't know why you made me a card to celebrate the fact that I passed my exam, but thanks. And I think arts and crafts is something that people lose touch with. They think, oh, I have 5 minutes, I'm gonna scroll on my phone. No, come on, like surround yourself with things that inspire you. Like I brought crocheting to campus this year. Am I gonna have time for it? Probably not. Am I gonna make time for it? Absolutely. Because I'm not a two-fingered person. I have hands.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I found that like there's a direct correlation between my use of like my unnecessary phone time and my happiness. Like 100%. Like I don't, it's not even a question. And so I was just like, I'm just gonna delete these apps. I don't really care about them. And I need to do things that like occupy my brain in a meaningful way that's not like too straining, because I do so many mentally straining things, right? School is straining, jobs are straining, whatever. Because we go on TikTok, not, or I've never used TikTok, but on
Oh,
Instagram or
you
Snapchat or whatever. Yeah, also I don't have Snapchat. Anyway, but I'm a bad example. But like Twitter, I go on Twitter when I'm like, I just need something new, something to insert into my brain. And I realized like, I'm like, I could just write someone a card. It doesn't take that much more effort, and it's so much more fun.
yes, I hear you on that. Sometimes I wonder like how my friends are able to always know what's going on in everyone's lives because they're always on social media because that's how they fill up their spare time. And I'm not saying anything negative about those people because I was that people. I was one of those people. And now when I have like a spare second to like rest and I don't know, just refocus, I'm trying to be very conscious of information consumption versus information production. Because the more information you consume, sure, you can like, you know what's going on, but how much are you reflecting upon that, and how much are you just becoming like passive, you know? And okay, totally side conversation, but I think that the decline of society is going to come around when we're like, and when robots are going to take over. It's when we stop thinking, creating, building, and it's when we just consume information and we feel like, oh yes, I'm consuming information, that's good, I'm growing, I'm growing my brain. But it's like, but what are you doing with that?
100%. And I think that's a ratio that we should all focus on our lives, our consumption to creation, and also how to validate your creation. Because I think at one point I got, like when I was writing on Medium, and there's like so many easily accessible stats, and then I would like look at them and they would make me feel certain things. And I'm like, why does this matter? Like, who is reading it? What, how am I using this? It doesn't matter if someone like randomly stumbles upon this article. Where this article becomes really useful is we're going to attach it in an email. Someone can read it and like really appreciate it. It's not like the random person. And I think social media has done a lot for the world and good and bad things total. But I just, that like ratio really concerns me. But anyway, just to kind of like switch gears, and I want to intersect TKS into this in two ways. One, I want to hear about your reflections on the community and the types of people and how that differs from Yale. And two, I'd be interested in maybe like a core memory from TKS that you've really held together.
Yes. So I was lucky enough to actually start off Yale with some of my closest friends being like from TKS, which was crazy because I distinctly remember. So I was graduating when the pandemic was still happening. So and I did TKS mostly through the pandemic, and so having the time to be at home more often and focus on TKS, I built stronger relationships there. Then I came to college and I realized, oh, I'm able to connect with these people because I connected with them in TKS and now we're going to start college together. So that was wild and I think that was really unique. When it comes to core memories, this is going to sound so cheesy, but I think the core memories are to come because now as an alumna, I realized there's so many people I didn't, whether they weren't in my city or my cohort, they still think in a similar way that I do. And so I'm still meeting those people even after the program. And like, who was that I met recently? Like, I met Samantha recently, who was doing the same women in investing program as me. And we met up in New York and we're like, whoa, okay, our paths totally crossed. So I'm looking forward to more interactions like that. So core memories are to come.
Amazing. I'm actually, it's interesting because I was looking at flights to San Francisco yesterday because I was like, oh, I need to get back. Like, I need, there's something really energizing about, and I was like, almost like tearing up thinking about it. I'm like, there's just like amazing people that I know in San Francisco right now, and I want to be there. Like, I want to, and I'm grateful to have that. And it's another thing I'm thinking about, like, I'm grateful to miss places. Like, I really miss Toronto. Toronto's an amazing city, like, so many, and I have good friends there. And fingers crossed, I gotta go at the end of the month. But I was like looking at flights to San Francisco, and I'm like, how cool is that? That, like, I have a place that I've only spent a couple days in my life, and it still feels so meaningful to me. And I think it's really cool that you're already like looking forward to the paths that cross. But let's talk about New York and your internship this summer and what you learned and what you're thinking about for next summer.
Oh my goodness. I think on a related note, SF is also like a very mystical place for me because there's so much built into like the phrase San Francisco, so much of the tech stereotypes, so much of it being like a historic port city, like even outside its connections and proximity to Silicon Valley. And I only spent 3 days there. And yet, because I know so many people there and I know so much of what's going on, anytime someone asks me about anything SF related, I'm like, oh yeah, like you should totally go to this event that XYZ is throwing on, I don't know, next Wednesday. And it's like, oh, have you been? No, I've never actually met them, but yeah.
No, the network is really strong.
Yeah, and I think so my home base, even though it's not not SF, I'm definitely an East Coast girl. It's New York. This was my first summer in New York because I always go back to spend time with my grandparents in Poland every summer. And I am not a corporate girl. That word scares me. It's one I would, corporate success is not a post-it I would put up on my wall. But this summer, I committed to an internship at the intersection of finance and consulting, two huge words at Yale because you're either grouped into the finance group or the consulting track. Huge stereotypes for both. And I ended up doing financial consulting. So when people heard that, they were like, okay, ultimate corporate girl boss. And I deeply dislike that. Totally not me. But I wanted to go to that environment to build up a skill set, understand how that world works, even though at first I came in thinking, oh, it's not me. And it's good to know what things are you and what things aren't you, but you have to be super open-minded, even regarding things. Okay, this sounds so cheesy, like be open-minded, like yeah, it's easier said than done. And so that was something I was working on this summer. I was going into a 9-to-5 job, even though I was living at home, and it felt very much like, oh, high school and middle school and just the good vibes. And this came easier with time because the people at my internship were wonderful. They're very thoughtful. And this is a side note that people might interpret incorrectly, but a lot of them did not go to Ivy Leagues, and the way they approach life and careers, totally different, so much more down to earth. And I know that people in Ivy League, like you can't generalize them, but there's definitely some shared mindsets. So refreshing to be in a non-Ivy environment.
And would you do the same thing next summer?
No. It's not because I decided, oh, corporate life isn't me. I think I got the things that I wanted out of that internship. I am even more fascinated by the nuances and complexities of how finance powers literally everything. But I am taking a step back to explore my writer self. So next summer, I think no concrete plans for now, but I want to enjoy being young. And for some people, enjoy being young, that means, oh, take on a variety of professional experiences because you can take risks without feeling the cost as much as someone further along in their career. But being young also meaning like, okay, I'm gonna go make a documentary film in Prague or somewhere else because you haven't done that before. So next summer is be young and explore yourself that way rather than professionally.
And so how many days until you turn 20?
Oh my goodness, exactly 20.
Soon. But what do you feel now that you're turning 20? You've had like a corporate internship, a nice name brand on your resume. I mean, that does have value, I would say, like anyway. But yeah, tell me about 20s and what you want. Like, what words do you want to invite? What's on your 20 sticky notes?
Oh, I love that. So this is definitely a rambly question because it's something that has been so much on my mind because I am way too introspective. So I have multiple notes app where I'm like desperately writing down things. I even asked this on the TK Slack, guys, what are some bucket list items to do now before I turn 20? And someone said skydiving, and I said, okay, wait, how do I do this in the next 20 days? So yeah, I think that introspection has, this alludes to another point we were considering about like the ratio between consumption and production. What do you think is, how to phrase this? I think I'm addicted to making content to prove that I know something. And I need a pause button on that. So that's kind of a side conversation, but do you think that sometimes you make too much content to prove you've lived something rather than to process it through writing?
Well, I think my writing process is so extreme that I process a lot through it. I think that there's a lot of things I don't publish. So that's another thing. Like, I'll start a lot of drafts, but I've like written enough that I don't need to like publish for quantity. Because everyone knows that I can like write a ton, I can write well, et cetera. So I'm not like, yeah. And then the other thing is that I feel like lately my writing has not been very like knowledge, maybe a little bit this summer with Burundi work, but it's not been super knowledge centric where I'm not showing people that I know something, except maybe the exception of the what I would do if I ran the World Health Organization article. I think that one's like a ton of knowledge, and I was like, this is my thesis of why global NGOs are broken. I was like, this I agree with. I like wrote that because I was so angry and so frustrated that that was our status quo to foreign aid, and that was our status quo towards global health. And I think at some point I just like reached a threshold where I was like, I'm writing these things as I hope value adds to other people. I don't need someone to like look at me and be like, oh, hey, like she has everything, like she's so smart. Because I hope that through conversation with me, people, and I think the people who are attentive enough and like notice enough will realize that I am pretty calculated. I really enjoy reading and my brain connects a lot of things. But it took me a really long time to get to the point where I'm like, oh, I'm confident. Like, I'm confident in what I wrote, and I don't need someone to be like, that's a great article, for me to be like, that's a great article kind of thing. I feel like that was a roundabout. But I don't know if you would agree. But anyway, like that.
I see the same thing in myself. I
Yeah.
publishing as much. This is, oh my gosh, people are definitely going to be confused why I'm a STEM major, but I was writing poetry a few days ago. Like I haven't written poetry since the beginning of high school, and I'm not going to publish it. You know, that was for me about my observations about walking down the beach, and I'm not going to publish that because I don't need to prove that I'm artistic to someone.
Yeah.
Then I, this is actually a funny thing about Twitter. So in the last winter, I stopped posting like threads about, oh, this is a video I watched and this is what I learned from it. And I started just posting random thoughts and like retweeting art accounts. I lost so many followers immediately. Like people were not vibing with my deep connections of, I don't know, my youthful explorations and philosophizing, my amateur philosophizing. And I didn't mind because I wasn't doing it to add value to people's lives by telling them about what rivers do not run through, I don't know, insert country. I was kind of documenting my thought process. So yeah, don't, I guess takeaways from that in a TKS manner habit I have is the first one was being conscious of the ratio of information consumption versus production. The second one is not always publishing what you write, because sometimes writing is a process for yourself rather than value add to others. The third one would be,
I mean, one idea that I have is thinking about who you're writing. So this summer, I was thinking a lot about the tuberculosis breakthrough, which is the release of the patents for Johnson and Johnson. And on one hand, I was like, good, like that was a good first step. But on the other hand, I was like, wait, this is a narrative that's repeating. And specifically, I remembered my misoprostol project, which was very much the same thing. Like it was really, really cost effective. It was like kind of like a gold standard example. And we had been like approving of this intervention since 2006, and nothing had happened by the 2020s. And it was like, so like my brain was like, oh my God, yes, good patents, like great. But at the same time, this is a repeated narrative. And so I put together, spent a lot of hours just like typing up the parallels between the tuberculosis breakthrough and the misoprostol breakthrough, and highlighting like why it actually is not that much of a breakthrough, because we have to pair it with other interventions. And I talked a lot with a woman who is a deputy health director at the USAID in a specific country. And we had like a lot of really interesting conversations in that, like that was like, it was like true. Like that was the parallel that we had an intervention, and we just didn't have the human capital and the kind of like logistical power to deploy it. And also like the willpower, the political willpower is like the biggest killer of public health interventions. And then she asked me, like, so who do you want to publish this for? And I was like, that's a good question. Like I kind of like worked through everything, like figured out all the parallels, like made a bunch of diagrams. And then I thought, I don't know. Like, I don't know who this is for. Because if this is for, you know, government officials, I should definitely write it in a different way. If this is for public health investors, I also have to write it in a different way, because I'm not using nearly enough numbers to illustrate ROI. If this is for high school kids to get passionate about these topics, I'm definitely taking more too much of a tech. And I was like, holy shit, like I just wrote this for me. Like this is just like my thing. And right now I just don't have an audience that like I feel like I didn't customize it to anyone. And instead of just like putting it out there, I was like, you know what, let's like table it for now. I had these thoughts. If it ever comes up in conversation, oh my gosh, I'm so calculated on TB versus music. Like I got it. But it then I got to the point where I was like, I could spend a bunch of hours editing this and making it much better, or let's do something else, because I don't feel really passionate about that right now. And it was interesting. It still served a purpose. Like it brought me closer to a really smart woman, and I got a couple of people to read over it, and I had a good conversation. But at one point, it's like back to the poetry example. Sometimes it's valuable just to keep it for you. So I have a couple of pieces of poetry that I've written and I really like, but also I'm not putting them anywhere, because part of the value add is that I can just say, hey, look, I'm gonna send you one of the poems that I wrote, like if you want to read it, and like I will. So I'll send after. But it's like it's also more special, because it's not like I'm sending you my blog link where you can share it with someone. It's just gonna be like a little Google Drive link, and I've shared it with a couple of people, and it's just so much more special that way. And yeah, it won't get me famous. It won't get me a bunch of likes. It won't get me a bunch of followers. But it's like a deeper, more profound set of connections than if I just sent you like one of my 120, whatever, I don't even know, articles.
Yeah. And as you were speaking, I kind of thought of this, like, I would so call that the back pocket principle or the back pocket mindset, in that you don't have to get the max value out of something. You don't need to extract every possible use case, every possible connection from creating something, which was definitely something I used to do. Like, if I made something, you bet I would understand all perspectives on it. I would share it around, just get
Yeah.
everything I can out of it, because I was very intentional with my time. But now I'm like, listen, I started this course on venture capital foundations like 2 years ago because I was like, I want a certificate in this. Do you think I finished that course? No. At first, I thought this is so critical for me to do. And then I realized I'm not passionate about this at this moment in my life. I don't need to extract the max value from getting that certification. I'm going to put that in my back pocket. I have this tool. Oh, side note, I love the concept of having a second brain on Notion, where I get to store all of my side quests and all of my ruminations on side topics for later. It's in the back pocket.
And it reminds me of like the sunk cost fallacy. If you're too focused on the cost that you put into something, you are going to end up finishing things that often don't matter. And I think a really important question is, what are you trying to prove and to whom? So that venture capital certificate, who is it for? Who is looking at it? Right? And then when you realize it's like, wait, I don't have an audience, back to that like same line of thought. If I don't have an audience and it's not like for a purpose and I'm not enjoying it, why? Why do I feel the need to finish it? That's the thing. Like, we live in a point where you can like right now Google so many ideas of what you can do in time. You can build a chatbot. You can, I don't, it doesn't even matter. We're talking about listing ideas right now, but there's too many things to do, not enough time.
Oh, tell me about
You
it. Tell me
have
about it. Yes. No.
So, oh, no, go ahead.
On that note, like, I have been removing so many things from my to-do list. So this is another thing that I learned in TKS. I have to-do lists for where I want to see myself in the next few weeks, next few months, next few years. I say that this is like a joke, but I know what I want to have for dinner on my 70th birthday, which is like really weird and specific, but it's a joke I make because, hey, I did that because I'm so meticulous about planning. But yeah, on that note, I've been taking things off my to-do list. I don't need that VC certificate. I don't need to, if I'm in this specific city, I don't need to talk to everyone there. That was so hard for me to say no to because I'm so curious about meeting people. I don't need to know this lawyer specializing in entrepreneurial law. It's already something. And sure, they just published a research paper, but I don't need it. So we're gonna take that off my to-do list, do something artsy instead, get some more sleep, and take things off. Simplify your life.
So it's interesting because today is Sunday and I have a lot of different things to do. Like this like whiteboard is filled with school to-dos and blah blah blah. And I think I'm really taking to heart the manager schedule versus the maker schedule. Yesterday was a maker's day. Yesterday
Oh,
I have been running my website for so long. I sent you a draft. Actually, technically, yeah, like if you go to my website, I fixed all the links and stuff. And it was really amazing just to spend like 8 hours thinking about things. I learned a lot and I had such a good time. And it was like very much a maker's day. And I had been having my website on my to-do list for months, like literally months. It's like, oh, I'm not ready, or oh, I want this element or that. And then I realized I was like, it's not like the website that the like final image, but I think it goes back to done is better than perfect. And that's kind of like what I delivered. And you know what? Like this reminds me of creating momentum. I think done is better than perfect matters because it removes a lot of that initial inertia. So as an example, I had not been wanting to touch my website for months because I was like, I didn't know exactly what I wanted. Except last weekend, actually on my birthday, I was like, I'm gonna get this started. So I like got my website started. I made a draft. It was so ugly, but in the moment I was like, this is fun. Like it's better than what existed. And then yesterday I came and I was like, oh my God, this sucks. Like, so I redid it again. But it was like, it took me making an ugly website last weekend for me to come back and like actually make a pretty website and like publish it. Like now I have a new website, something I didn't do for months and months and months. So it just took that like little bit of like done, like get started. And I think that's really significant too, like when it comes to studying. For example, I'm in a differential equations class right now, and it's hard as hell, especially because the professor is like, he's in his own head, right? Like, he's having fun. He wears the exact same outfit every day. So I'm like, I love that element of it. But in terms of like the explanation, I'm like, okay, this is definitely a self-taught course. So I spent like the first 2 weeks of school being like, oh, I'll do it on the weekend. Oh, I'll do it on the weekend, because I felt so intimidated by me sitting in a lecture hall and for like the first time in a really long time, like not really knowing what's going on at all. And then yes, a couple of days ago, I like found this professor that I learned Calc 3 off of, basically. And I just like started watching his DiffDQ videos, and I was like, wait a second, I can do it. And it just created this momentum. And so this morning I got up 6:30 and I was like doing my differential equations, like self-studying. And there's like something really powerful.
Yes.
Thank you. I know. I'm like very proud. Like, that's the willpower. That's the discipline. But often it just takes like doing that 20 minutes. You know, I don't know what your classes are this semester. Are you taking the architecture of birthing course of delivery?
No. That was one I thought you would love, but yeah, I am simplifying my schedule. I'm trying to get more focused.
Yeah. So what classes are you taking, and how do you do the hard classes?
Oh my gosh, that is something I've been working on, because my friend pointed this out really well. I forgot the way she phrased it, but it was something like, I'm a hard worker, I'm curious about things, like I'm excited about building things, but I'm not a good student, because I just, school, you know, I actually slapped this to Sophic a few days ago, and I nailed it. I was like, so what are you up to these days? Are you doing school, or are you doing the school of life? And I loved that phrase, because I was like your typical, like, good high school student. And then something clicked during TKS, and I was like, nope, school of life is the way to go. And now I'm trying to tell myself that, hold on, take it slow. School is actually the way to go. So I'm in my aspiring academic era right now. And
I think there's something to gain from school. And you were talking about grad school, too.
Yes. Okay, so as of last night, I want to go to grad school for art history. As of last night, I used to not be a fan of grad school, but all of a sudden I realized, hold on, I love school. Yeah, we're going to go major in something crazy.
Yeah, that's amazing. But you were saying, how do you do the hard classes?
The hard classes. So this semester I'm taking my most difficult yet CS courses, and they're very math-based. And just to shout out for everyone who also struggles with math, it all goes back to foundations. You need to know what tools you have in your toolbox. That is my life hack for math, which I'm trying to work on.
100%.
The basics. You got to know the basics.
My math book is just like the equations you need to know. Yeah. Like, this is like my work. Yeah.
So when I'm preparing to take these difficult classes, first mindset, you got to know the basics. The second one is having a sexier word than just like math for things. So I'm trying to tell myself, as a computer science major, I am trying to understand complex systems. And I'm building up my mindset to be able to break things down into little bits and then know how they come together to form a whole. And understanding complex systems and networks, that's so much more interesting than like, oh yeah, I have to understand algorithmic optimization. I don't know. That, like, for me,
I literally do the exact same thing. I'm like studying chemistry and I'm like, no, I'm studying complex systems. Literally, like, word for word, I swear.
Yeah. It's on my post-it. It's on my post-it.
And I think it's, like, my degree very, and it's so interesting, because, like, computer science, I'm sure there's, like, people who kind of, like, have a path, but, like, in a chemistry class, it's 95% uptight pre-med majors. Mm-hmm. And then the other 5% are, like, pretty, like, diehard wannabe PhD researchers. And then there's me. Neither of those things. But it's so interesting, because, like, the way I've kind of, like, rationalized it is it's a super tangible degree, and I like tangible things. And it's like a study of something super, super difficult. And I really like that. Like, I like the difficulty. And I like that it's also a study of relationships, because humans are just big versions of atoms.
Yeah.
And like, yours is also a study of relationships. It's how you like program things to interact with each other. It's very similar. Like, my degree is just more of like, how do we observe the way things program? And then what are the principles of how things interact and how things like anti-interact and energies and states? And I think that's so freaking cool. As a bunch of analogies for a future book, I'll write.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for people to like write books. You know, I feel like I've got like two conversations that we can go off into.
Yeah, I know. I have like seven.
I think as I'm taking art history courses, as I'm taking architecture courses, I am worried about how people will remember our era. And I think in the past, I was mostly worried from like a digital dark age perspective, where everything that we make and create is just online. And like, what if this is so silly, but what if like it rains on an important hard drive and it gets rusty and you lose all that information, or people don't know how to read a JPEG file in the future? So that's one part. But then also, I'm obsessed with the Baroque era, really specifically, and it's insane when you look at the paintings there. And then you think about modernity and it's of contemporary times, and then it's like, well, who are the artists of today? Who's making the big beautiful paintings of insert key historic moment of 2023? So I'm worried about the preservation of culture, of contemporary culture, because it's not going to be as pretty. And I couldn't give you an answer for what I think the contemporary artists of today are working on. Sure, it can be some abstract stuff, it can be some AI stuff. I don't know. I'm worried. I don't know who like the seminal writers of our age are going to be. But yeah, that's been on my mind.
Yeah. I recently was looking at, because I took an art class last semester, and it was like Leonardo's Last Supper. It's like one of the prettiest things I've ever seen. I was like, oh my God. And I was like looking at things and I'm like, this is beautiful. It's a beautiful painting, but it's also like so deep and dark. And I was like, so profound.
Yes.
But yeah, okay, let's go do some rapid fire questions, if that works for you.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's start with, what's the next big thing that not a lot of people are talking about?
Oh, honestly, I think we just answer it. The thing about art and how our contemporary times will be documented in society.
Amazing. And who is someone who inspires you most right now?
Ooh, I am not good at this question because this changes very often. So I'm going to say, rather than a person, I would say, okay, I'll give you a school of thought. So I think there was like 12 Greek sages, all of whom had like, who were just known by their first names and like very short catchphrases. So one that I really like was Nothi Seuton, which basically means know thyself. So right now I'm inspired by ancient wisdom and that school of thought rather than people. So I'm a quick catchphrase that I have in the back of my mind that are guiding my decision making.
Amazing. Phenomenal. What is something you are bad at but love doing?
Oh, this was just a Twitter post that I made. It's really aggressively mediocre, because that shows you're trying, even though it's not ideal. I think it's on Twitter I said dancing, but let's see. I think it's things that people, oh God, it also like goes back into how you define like bad and mediocre. Oh gosh, it's a deep question. I think I am aggressively mediocre at things that people make careers out of, but I try to fit into like a habit. So maybe cooking is another one of them. I guess writing poetry too, because people make careers out of that, but I'm just doing it as an amateur for fun.
I think that's a really good mental framework, but also I want to shout out to you, because you're like, that's a really deep question. And I was like, it doesn't have to be, but you choose to make it. And I think that's really cool that like you can take a question and it can become deep when you start to think about, what does this word mean? I could define it this way. Can someone else define it another way? And you start to realize that this like one dimensional thing that you could probably answer in two or three words actually has like infinite axes, depending on beautiful thought. Anyway, what advice would you give to your 13-year-old self?
Oh man, these are such deep questions. I would say, as a very fellow intentional, calculated person, I wouldn't say anything about change, because I think everything I did then was meant to be. I wouldn't do anything differently. I was a huge bookworm, so just keep doing that, because that builds perspective. Oh, don't go home. Don't go home. And that's, it sounds weird at first thought, but I think I was, because I grew up as an only child, my instinct after school was like, okay, now we go home and we, I don't know, do homework, right? I should have been, this is actually good advice. I should have been going out and hanging out with people and doing more young people things, even if that meant going to New York, even if that meant commuting an hour to another borough, because that's where my friends lived.
Yeah.
So yeah, be young, enjoy being 13. Sorry, that was a boring answer to that.
It was great. And just to end off, what is something that everyone should experience at least once in their life?
Ooh. This is something that is also a very cheesy answer, but I think it's very me. It's being alone in a country where you don't speak the language, but it's also very similar to where you grew up in. And here's my rationale for this. So I feel like New York is, I'm sorry, Urban Studies ULA is coming out. I feel like New York is a global city. It's very distinct in many ways, but you can find many cities within New York. And when I was traveling this summer, I realized I live my life in a very specific way in New York. But hold on, there's people doing the exact same thing in, for instance, Warsaw, right? And I was taking the tram one day there this summer, and I realized this is someone's commute, you know? Like, I was doing it as a tourist, but this is someone's commute. And that was a huge realization that even though you're in a country, I speak Polish, so this was maybe a bad example, but I was in a country that was so different from my own where I grew up in, but I was finding similarities in the way that people behaved. And I was like, wow, so much perspective that we're more similar than we think.
Yeah, it's totally beautiful. I completely resonate as a little globetrotter for the last year and a bit. But this is a beautiful, beautiful podcast. I hope you have an amazing weekend. Good luck at the fair and the young people things. Enjoy your last 20 days of teenagehood. Go skydiving, please. I think you totally should. Well,
Thank you.
I'll see you soon. All
I will get
right.
to you soon and get ready for some content about turning 20 because I'm doing it for me, but I'm also doing it for all the other lost 20-year-olds.
I want to read that. I've already passed the little line, but I'm only like a month behind you, so, or in front of you. So
Okay.
relevant.
Thank
All
you,
right.
everyone. Bye, Izzy.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks for catching up with us. That was Making It Real by TKS, and I'm your host, Isabella. I hope you have a crazy audacious week, and I will see you next time.